This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
But who's counting, right?
And his name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen,
please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's the takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS. Yes, I.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense. And you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. Major Garrett, host of The Takeout. Thanks for joining us. Out and about again. McIntyre is our host restaurant. We were here once before. Our guest this week and the topic this week, a book written by none other than Mark Leibovich. The book is titled, Thank You for Your Servitude. He will explain what that's about in a minute. Mark, how are you?
Major, thanks for having me back. I'm a friend of The Takeout.
You are a friend of The Takeout. You are a distinguished member of our Hall of Participants. Have you been on the show before?
Proud to be a member of the Hall of Participants.
So Mark Leibovich's career includes Washington Post, New York Times, San Jose Mercury News, for those who are really fine granular analysts. Yeah. New York Times Magazine, currently now at The Atlantic.
Correct.
What is your book about?
My book is about, people think it's a Trump book. It's called,
yes,
Thank You for Your Servitude, Donald Trump's Washington and the Price of Submission, full title with subhead. But it is basically the story of Washington over the last 5 or 6 years as told through the perspective of the Republican Party and how they kowtowed to Trump. So basically it is another Washington book. It's a sequel to it was originally intended as a sequel to a Washington book I did 9 years ago, which is called This Town, but it wound up becoming about what's happened to the Republican Party and what it's been like to live in Washington and be around the White House for the last 6 or 7 years, which I know we've all done, we've all been through.
Exactly. So. Would you agree that if you had the choice, would prefer to read this history than live it?
Yeah. I didn't realize. I mean,
that's how I sort of put myself to sleep every night. God,
yeah.
What do I wish for? Well, it's an active time, it's a historic time, but it feels at times to me exhausting.
Well, you do sort of wonder, like, how will history be treated, right? And again, I don't pretend to, like, think I'm a historian or this is for the historical, right? I mean, I'm trying not to use, like, big highfalutin terms, like rough draft of history, that kind of thing. But, you know, you sort of wonder, I mean, if two sides can't agree on, like, a crowd size on Inauguration Day,
right,
if there are alternative facts over here, regular facts
and
over
genuine
here.
Genuine facts?
Yes. Like, how will history be adjudicated,
right,
in, like, 100 years? Like, is that even going to be a thing anymore? So
what you just said, I'm going to take some issue with, having just read the book this weekend. I do think you wrote this book, tell me if I'm wrong, to chronicle what people said at this period of time, so when the inevitable period comes when they deny it, because you and I both know they will.
They, of course. Yeah.
All of the suck-ups to the Trump world and the Trump mania and attitudes will at some point in their political careers deny it.
Absolutely.
They will attempt to.
Yeah,
and it feels to me like you wrote this book to say, one place on one shelf or many shelves, I will not allow you to do that.
Yeah, I would hope that, you know, there will be many shelves for many different books, but leading with this one. I completely. And, you know, my first hope, and I assume it's your first hope and the first hope of any serious people in our profession, is that at some point there is some kind of course correction back to a serious discussion of the facts, a serious discussion of what it is to be American, patriotic, decent, truthful. I mean, you know, these were all things we took for granted even 10 years ago when we were despairing over, the swamp is out of control.
Right. So. Now, you wrote something in the book that I wrote in my book, Mr. Trump's Wild Ride. We both came to the same conclusion. which is this, because we all went to a lot of Trump rallies.
Yes.
I'm at more than 100. Arden Fari, my beloved producer, probably 120, but that's a lot.
It's a lot.
And
more than
you and I heard this, and you wrote it in the book, and I wrote it in my own way. Trump supporters, and I don't disparage them, say, whatever your Mark Leibovich, Major Garrett, Picayune question about some fact that Trump got wrong, he speaks a bigger truth. And to them, it was deeply meaningful.
Right.
How much have you given thought to that process, what that means, and the fact that from one election to another, Trump got 10 million more votes.
Absolutely.
After people observed what you chronicle in these 5 years?
Yes. Great question. I would not discount, even today, you know, as I would not have discounted in 2016, the degree to which they hold in contempt the quote-unquote...
You and me?
The media...
The media.
...elites, the academic elites...
Right.
...the corporate elites...
Corporate elites.
...the, you know, the coastal people.
Yes.
Not all coastal. I mean, a lot of big cities, college towns, you know, between the coasts. But there's a type. The type tends to be Democrat, you know? I mean, back in the Reagan days, like, they were perceived to be more conservative. Like, Goldman, like, you know, academia, even. I mean... College-educated people were overwhelmingly Republican. That's that sort of flip. So, I don't know. I do think that, to some degree, Trump was a convenient kind of blunt object for a lot of people.
And he was known to them by his enemies, and that mattered a great deal to them.
Maybe it mattered the most to them, to some degree.
If there was a reaction, and you talk about these reactions in the book quite frequently, that reaction, that tectonic sense of, oh, the things are shifting and people are angry at Trump, therefore he must be on to something.
Right.
Whatever the particulars are were meaningless. And I think that's where the whole election denial thing has gone. The particulars have completely vanished.
Completely.
Nobody can cite anything anymore. They're all debunked, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The enemies matter.
The enemies matter.
Including me, academics, election officials.
Yeah.
We're all part of somehow this insidious set of voices that they perceive threaten them at a very primal level.
Very primal level. Yeah, and look, it's a...
And that's a fact.
It is a fact, and it's a...
And is influencing our politics.
In a big way. What I focused on in the book and what really offends me... None of what you just said offends me necessarily. I mean, I you know, like you said, we're not disparaging Trump supporters or, not, you know, we're not meaning to. I mean, what...
They have their feelings, they have their perspectives, and they have a vote, and they've exercised it.
And they're fellow Americans. I came to resent and wanted to focus on the people who knew better. The people in Washington, the Republicans, overwhelmingly in Washington, all of whom knew better, who will privately tell us this is nonsense, this is complete BS, and can you say BS on the takeout?
Yes, you can.
And
with gusto.
And then when the camera comes on, when the mic comes on, it's like, you know, all hail Mr. Trump. I mean, he is our guy. We
or
love him.
Or I didn't see it, or I don't have a comment, or I can't really relate to that.
They
literally
away. Literally. I mean, you've been in those situations
where
Republican senators, all of whom knew better, are literally running away, pretending to be on the phone. It was sad, and it was cowardly, and that's what the focus is.
Pick your metaphor. Lights on, lights off, mic on, mic off. Yeah. It's essentially two separate conversations Republicans would have with you.
Yeah.
A private conversation that was florid, full of specifics, revulsion.
Revolt.
And then there's this separate, publicly consumed conversation that contains none of that and betrays a sense of fidelity that doesn't actually exist in any intellectual sense.
It is exhausting. It is really exhausting. I mean, you know, also, you know, luckily a lot of this is on tape.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of these people actually did run against him in 2016. They would say, oh, I've evolved. I've come to like him. I golfed with him a few times. Oh, I realize he's a great guy. I mean, that's Lindsey Graham's thing. I mean, but... No, they all know better. And what's interesting, and I don't think I've talked about this, you look at, like, Marco Rubio, you look at Kevin McCarthy, when they actually do talk about this publicly, they look so sad.
Mm-hmm.
They look miserable because they, on some level, and it's probably pretty far down at this point, but on some level they know what they're doing. Elise Stefanik. That's the other thing. Elise Stefanik, you know, could be a, I don't know, she could be majority leader of the House or, you know, the number three or the whip, whatever
conference
it is.
Conference chair.
Conference
else
chair. She'll get
addition.
A big job
right.
potentially if things break right. You know, like John Kennedy of Louisiana. She went to Harvard. I mean, Rubio, I remember, you know, when I first met him in 2010 and then wrote about him when he was running for president.
Great aspirational new face of the Republican Party.
I mean, tremendously charismatic. I mean, his story about the danger of charismatic leaders and tyrants based on his parents' experience with Castro was so, like, it was so Reagan-esque. I remember just being blown away by it.
Reagan-esque, resonant, and relevant.
Except all of it.
Except things have changed. Mark, let me interrupt 100%. You. Let me run to break. We're going to do that here in a second. McIntyre's is our host restaurant. Always happy to be out and about. We have a lunch menu in front of us. Mark will decide what he wants to do.
During the break?
Yes. War on the book. Thank you for your servitude. When we come back, I'm Major Garrett. Segment two, coming right at you.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. I'm Major Garrett. McIntyre is our host restaurant. Mark Leibovich, our special guest. So, folks, if you don't know or have experienced the pleasure of reading Mark Leibovich, one thing you need to understand about him in Washington is there's a masochistic quality to what Mark Leibovich brings to his biographies. People want to be skewered by him. They want to be lanced, pierced completely through, run through by the rapier that is Mark Leibovich's observational approach.
It's a fun book read. It's fun beach read.
No, seriously. Yeah, people want to be in this. They do. And they're like mortified if they're not such a grandee in this town that they're not getting the Leibovich treatment. You've learned this, right?
Yeah, and there's a whole group of people who snub me whenever I see them in public to prove it. There truly is. However, you know, it's part of
the game. Because one of the things that you wrote in this town is that Washington is a place and had become a place not only with sort of low-grade garden variety hypocrisy, but it had become an institutionalized factory of phoniness.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, Trump said much the same thing.
He did.
What's the difference, or is there one?
You know, it's okay, so, by the way, I mean, people have been running against Washington and sort of like saying, God, I'm going to come in and clean up Washington, or I'm going to hate on Washington. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the city exists to be despised, which is why, you know,
it's a grand American tradition.
It's a grand American tradition, which is why Farmer Joe from North Dakota rails on Washington, gets into the Senate or gets into Congress, and then never leaves. Right. Either they don't leave their office or they get a lobbying job or something like that.
Right.
And then they'll maybe say in their press release, so-and-so will be splitting time between Washington and Fargo, which means that 99.9% of his time will be in Washington. Maybe he'll go visit his mother a year in Fargo or something. But, no, you're right. But what Trump did is that he... And so this town was kind of... I mean, in retrospect, it's kind of a book about misdemeanors. It's like, oh, look, a Democrat and a Republican are going into business together, right?
They're lobbying.
Yeah, right? It's like a comedy of manners. But it was... it wasn't... I mean, in retrospect, the stakes were much lower. At least they felt much lower. I mean, now we literally have people saying, you know, we're in a fight for our democracy, and I don't think they're being overheated. I mean, you saw what happened January 6th. Mm-hmm. We saw what happened, you know, for 5 years. So, but no, Trump took that out, like, in a big way, and he just made it, he just named names, and he was nothing but contempt, and he did it much more viscerally than Obama or Reagan or anyone did.
And the fact that that took hold tells you what about America right now?
You know, here, this is a
because
really,
because
a great
there's one thing to say he said it, but you and I have seen the receptivity up close,
right?
Not just one place.
Oh, absolutely.
Dozens and dozens, and as you say in the book, and as I lived this for 16 months on the road, people come from miles around, streaming
blocks.
Streaming threads of traffic, For hours.
Hours. No, exactly. And you're thinking, okay, then you get back to your hotel room, you turn on, you know, some, you say, oh, the poll is Hillary's up by 10, or right. Hillary could win North Carolina, or even Missouri, you know, like, it's like, or Ohio.
Texas.
She's throwing new money into, you know, yeah, Ohio. And so it felt out of whack, right? It was like, okay, we're in this bubble, and we're watching this. And but, you know, there was always a sense for people who had gone to, like, a few Trump rallies or who were certainly covering the Trump campaign that, are we really is this being measured? Because this is unlike anything I'd ever seen. The size of the crowds, the frequency of the desperation to get in.
It
was real.
Unlike a lot of other political events, almost never was there food or water. Almost rarely were there seats. Usually you stood, and you'd wait for hours.
You'd wait for hours? I mean,
Trump would essentially subject his followers to the least hospitable situations imaginable, and they loved it.
Not to mention the press who were following him all over.
Get up on the mic.
Not to mention the press that was following all over and, you know, subjected to nonstop abuse from the podium, from the crowd.
Yep.
I mean, it was pretty menacing, as you know. So, no, it was unbelievable. Unlike anything I'd ever seen. I mean, I don't have a good read on what that looks like today compared to what it looked like in 2016, 2020. I haven't been to a Trump rally in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear anecdotally that maybe the magic is wearing off a little bit, but I don't know.
So what I'm driving at here is a way to try to reconcile all the things you have in the book with the current state of American political discourse. Because at one level, I'm as contemptuous as you are, though not as brilliantly written as you put it together, of all the Republicans you talk to for this duality that they live in. But on the other hand, I'm like, they are realists. They live in a confined world where if they want to keep their job, they must do a certain number of things in order to keep it, because things have been reversed. They're not in control any longer, and that's what I think is about what you're describing, the helplessness and sadness. They're not in control.
Yes.
Or so they have assumed.
I would.
So if you tell yourself you're not in control, guess what? You're not in control.
Correct.
That's what they've told themselves.
That's what they've told themselves. I would offer that they are 100% in control. Mm-hmm. Liz Cheney is no more or less pragmatic than Kevin McCarthy is. She has just made a choice.
Or Lee Stefanik, or Steve Scalise, or on the other end, Mark Sanford,
Jeff Flake. I mean, depending on what side you come down. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you ask, like, is it worth the parking space? Is it worth the job? Is it worth not being tweeted about? I mean, what's really depressing is the incredibly high volume of people who are willing to make the choice, like, just to go pure expediency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think one of the reasons Liz Cheney is, I mean, obviously she's in big political trouble, but she's willing to lose. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a novel thing.
Willing to lose.
Yeah.
And one thing I think is thematically important about your book is it basically says we've reached the stage after January 6th in which we saw something unimaginable. However, when I read your book, I hear you saying all the whitewashing that began almost as soon as Trump gained momentum led inexorably to January 6th.
Yeah.
Because all of that was a practiced effort to not see what was visible, to minimize what was harsh and repellent and repugnant, and in so doing, laid the groundwork intellectually, politically, thematically for January 6th.
Absolutely. Yeah. And
so they're all complicit.
They're completely complicit. And even more chilling than that, or as chilling than that, is what he's come back from. You were here, like that 2-week period.
Yeah.
Republicans were running from him finally. Like, okay, this is the fever break. Okay, he survived the Helsinki press conference. He survived Charlottesville. He survived Access Hollywood. Go down the list. He survived losing the election by 7 million votes on November, whatever it was, 3rd.
3rd.
So now he's coming back from this? I mean, in short order, Mitch McConnell basically games it so that impeachment's going to happen after January 20th, which ensures he's not going to be convicted. McCarthy goes down to Mar-a-Lago on the 28th. Like, within a few days, McConnell's doing his I will support the nominee thing. Rick Scott's giving him an award.
Giving him a freedom award.
Whatever.
Steady rehabilitation.
Right. And so then the new Republican platform goes from being whatever Trump wants, which was the official platform in 2020, to January 6th didn't happen, and
or if it
the
did,
election,
it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad, and he was screwed out of the election. I don't care how many court cases he lost. I don't care what Bill Barr said or Chris Krebs or Krebs.
Yeah.
Yes,
Chris
I mean with the whole game. What Mike Pence said with the whole game, and then so this is basically the Republican platform 2 years on.
And do you find that seismically depressing?
Absolutely. Here's why. Okay. Let me just give you a very clean contrast here, or two, actually. One, the conservatives in England, like last month, decided, all right, enough with this Boris Johnson. We're just going to, we're going to join arms. A few of us are, and we're going to speak our truth.
Gonna sack him.
He's gone. Right. Now, obviously, different system of government. But another contrast that is our system of government, Watergate. Okay? Obviously, a different time. There was no
yes.
Fox News when Watergate happened. But the reason Nixon finally left was not because Democrats were yelling and screaming or not
John Chancellor told him to.
No. Everyone's like, oh, well, when you lose Cronkite or when you lose... Yes, exactly. No, it was because Barry Goldwater, one of the most conservative members of the Republican Party, who was then, senator from Arizona, walked up to the Capitol or walked up to the White House with a couple of other Republican leaders of the Senate and said, Mr. President, you have lost support. It's time to go. And Nixon, for all of his demons and flaws, had enough shame or had enough good sense or enough patriotism to just say, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to orchestrate a insurrection.
Right.
God knows what Nixon could have done. He could have told them to buzz off and, whatever.
But he hit the pavement.
But Republicans stopped Nixon,
right.
Ultimately.
We're going to stop right there. Head to segment three. Mark Leibovich is our special guest. The New York Times best-selling book. Thank you for your servitude. More when we come back. I'm Major Garrett. See you in a second.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. McIntyre's is our host restaurant. Always great to be out and about. Mark Leibovich, our guest. Thank you for your servitude is the book. Number one New York Times bestseller. Beach read, yes, but it's a read for the ages, folks. It chronicles a time we won't soon forget. And back to this point about Trump supporters. Look, they cast ballots in the 2020 election. Trump increased his vote total from 2016 to 2020 by over 10 million votes. That's a fact. Joe Biden beat him by 7 million votes. That's a fact. Nothing askew happened in the 2020 election to materially affect the outcome. Nothing. I've got a book about that coming out in September. It's called The Big Truth.
Oh.
All right?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
The Big Truth.
The Big Truth.
Is it
catchy, don't you think?
No, I like it. You need a big thing. No, that's good.
Yes.
All right.
So it's going to be all about that.
All right.
And it takes seriously all the various concerns, things that have been raised, and walks you through step by step. So nothing happened that was materially influential on the outcome of the election. Nothing. And we have to get to a point in American life where that can be an accepted truth, because if we don't, we will no longer have a functioning democracy.
No.
If you have an orientation to balloting that goes like this, when my side wins, it's legit. When my side loses, it's fraudulent. We're done.
Yeah.
And we're inching, and the reason I wrote the book is because we are moving in this direction. It is unsustainable.
We're leaping
and
in
that's
this
the,
direction.
And that's the back third of your book.
Yeah, it sort of is, right?
It's
illegit. No. Look, people talk about, and people kind of roll their eyes, but norms and traditions and precedents.
Right.
It's all based on basic good faith, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
forbearance.
Forbearance, shared truth,
right.
Intellectual honesty. People, I don't know. I mean, what if, there's, a new Brad Raffensperger sitting in, the Secretary of State's office in Georgia in 2020. I mean, I don't know what's his deal. I guess he'll probably be still in office.
He will be.
But there will be other elections.
He's
got
to get through the general election, but
he does.
He made it through a primary, which was kind of a reassuring signal that if you can have this argument about what or what didn't happen,
absolutely.
The guy who had the proof will be factual case won.
Yeah, and Brian
but others
Kemp,
are losing.
Brian Kemp, others are losing, but there are, you know, a lot of election deniers across the country
yes.
who are on ballots who are in a position to win.
And I think one of the other points of your book is if Trump got off that fact-free hobby horse, they would all give it up.
Absolutely.
They're only playing this game
yeah.
because he won't let go. And because he won't let go, they can't let go.
Right.
Not because it's true, not because something bad happened, but because he won't let it go. And if I'm going to ask you, if Trump were to say two sentences, I'm moving on, I have my issues, but we're done, that would end it.
It would end it, and you know, I would argue that if he had done that a year and a half ago, it would have been he would have been politically so much more viable now than he is now. Although he's still pretty viable, right? But you know, he got all those votes. He could have conceded somewhat gracefully.
We had Mick Mulvaney on the show 2 weeks ago, and I reminded him of a column he wrote in the Wall Street Journal.
Didn't age well.
Trump said gracefully and concede.
Yeah, no.
And he admitted, I was writing it to persuade him in public.
Yeah, well.
Because I couldn't talk to him.
Audience of one. No, look, I mean, there are...
And that's another theme in your book, this whole idea of audience of one, that you have to play to this grand master and stroke him in so many convoluted ways, or you can't possibly get your way.
No, there was like, I mean, so Kevin McCarthy is one of the recurring figures in the book, and I remember... towards the end of the book, I'm just sitting there. I guess we were in Bakersfield, where his hometown. And every time I would ask him a somewhat Trump-related question or 1/6-related question, it would just be body language. He would like hunch his shoulders. He'd look scared, and why do you keep asking me about Trump? And the reason it's not that he couldn't talk endlessly about Trump privately. Or to his donors or what have you. It's just that he knew that if he said one word that Trump was not going to like and that got in the New York Times, where I happened to be writing at the time, you know, he was going to get in big trouble. Could cost him his speakership, and the only thing that matters is speakership.
I'm just going to run some names by you.
All right.
Paul Ryan.
Complicated guy.
Complicit?
Sure, to a point. You know, again, still on the Fox News board. I think without Fox News, Trump would not... have rehabilitated it as many times as he was. So, yeah, that, you know, Ryan, very ambivalent. Not a hero to the right, not a hero to the left, kind of caught in the middle. I think he's probably very happy to be out of public life right now as much as
Mike he can. Pompeo.
You know, kind of an Eddie Haskell type. You know, again, we'll stroke Trump with the best of them. I don't know if I can use this, but there's a great line courtesy of Susan Glasser in The New Yorker, profiled Mike Pompeo, comparing him to a heat-seeking missile for Donald Trump's, can we not say that
rectum,
word?
Rectum, I think, would be a
posterior,
clinical term. Yes.
Yeah, anyway, I can't say that enough.
It's a clinical term.
It's a clinical term.
Clinical terms here
but
at the
takeout. Smart guy. He gets, you know, he gets the joke. It's depressing.
Chris Christie.
Oh, man. Christie, you know, he was humiliated so many times by Trump. He apparently is going to be sort of like an anti-Trump truth teller type, but I don't think he quite knows what he's going to be. Like Chris
can
Christie.
Can he be? A truth teller about Trump after all this?
I don't think so. But, you know, look, Chris Christie loves the game.
And loves to be around.
Loves to be around, loves, you know, he's kind of a wise guy.
I will tell you a story.
I
interviewed Chris Christie on C-SPAN for one of his books. It was a book about Kushner and everything and that hassle.
Yeah.
And he said something in the middle of the interview that stopped me cold. He said, I've known Trump for many, many years. Donald Trump is least loyal to the people who are most loyal to him.
It's true. Absolutely.
And that had a ring of truth to me.
Well, it's certainly in his case.
So much so that I had him repeat it. I said, say that again. And he said it again, flat out.
I mean...
I think history has borne that out.
Yeah, in Christie's case, and probably most dramatically.
Would you also say
Mike
that of
Pence's
the people
case.
Who have been arrested and prosecuted for storming the Capitol?
No, because he did
he could have been more loyal to
them. He could have pardoned them. He could have, like, told them, like, don't get in trouble. Don't get arrested. Don't, like, be violent. I mean, again... there's any number of ways he could have helped them out while he was pardoning, you know, Jared Kushner's father-in-law and, you know, any number of, you know, Bannon. Yeah, just the whole crowd. So, Mike Pence, there was no more loyal vice president in history. You know, could have been hung. Hate to say it, but, you know.
Might have happened.
And I'm not sure Trump would have been all that upset. It's hard to know. I mean, that's like, the thing about writing these books and stories is you get into these weird thought experiments, but like, what if that happened?
Right.
Like, is Trump still viable? I'm not sure. It's the Fifth Avenue thing.
Right. It's hard to know.
It's hard to know.
And you write in the book that you don't want to try to be an armchair psychologist. Lots of people have tried around Trump. They're actual psychologists.
Absolutely.
Wrote an entire book about it.
Absolutely.
The danger of Donald Trump.
Yeah, his own
but
cousin.
But you can't, as you have been, I think, accurately described, the preeminent anthropologist of what Washington, D.C. is, good and bad. You can't escape the temptation to try to get into this psychological world, have you?
Oh, not really. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, to be honest with you. I mean, like, I always felt like I knew him fairly well. I thought, you know, kind of compelling, but I can tune him out. He's basically harmless, you know, whatever. He's got his thing. Yeah, it became less harmless when he became a birther and that whole thing started. Mm-hmm. Not harmless. But then I'm thinking, you know, he's running for president. Maybe he was just playing a part, and, you know, that went away in, like, 2 minutes. Like,
yep.
So I don't know. Look, the guy, I think he is about as well-known a politician. You know, everyone knows him. He's very predictable, I would say.
And it strikes me, and you write about this in the book, that on January 6th, he was mesmerized because this was, to his mind, a stupendous act of allegiance and love for him. And he was transfixed by it.
Totally. I mean, that to me is the...
And the underlying moral wretchedness of it, what was happening institutionally in the country, the guardrails that were being shattered, vanished from his sense of...
Yeah. Yes.
Sight.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. Okay, so, you know, obviously entire committees, you know, their entire hearings have been devoted to that however many minutes, that few hours when he was just watching.
187 minutes.
Yeah, he's watching TV. Stephanie Grisham, who was still working for Melania Trump, at least then, had this image of him just sitting there saying, just sort of watching and saying, I'm doing this for me.
For me.
And to me, that is the lesson here. It's like this little boy in a bubble, and it was just... It's to me, it's still chilling to a point, you know, because people were dying, literally.
Right, because the powers of the presidency are vast, and when the presidency is me, not us, dangers lurk. Mark Leibovich is our special guest. We are out and about. So happy to be out and about again. McIntyre is our host restaurant. We're just going to stick with our Diet Coke this time, but, you know, next week, who knows what we're going to eat at the takeout. I'm Major Garrett, segment 4 coming up.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Mark Leibovich, our special guest, the book, New York Times bestseller. I want to mention that. Thank you for your servitude. So, Leibovich has a lot of energy and tenacity about him, and he's an ability that far exceeded mine to hang out at the Trump Hotel.
Oh, brutal.
I would go there occasionally, but I just, after the White House.
It's hard, right?
All hour after hour after hour.
It's more White House.
Extending that onto my day. I will freely admit, it was probably journalistically inept for me not to spend more time there, but my brother, I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
You were missed. You were missed all the time. I will be honest.
Why was that not only an important place to be, but a metaphorically resonant place to be?
Well, it was the Republican capital of Washington. It was, you'd have the White House staff just going there after God knows what they were doing.
The Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, lived there for a while,
didn't he? He lived there for a while. His new wife with a little literal lapdog in the purse. She lived there. Rudy had
metaphors everywhere.
Rudy had a suite. He had a regular table at the BLT.
The steakhouse there,
steakhouse,
yes.
A lot of tourists. A lot of hangers on. And, you know, it was Rick's American Cafe. It was like gambling. I mean, it was a racket. And Trump himself would go in. It was the only restaurant. The steakhouse, the BLT steakhouse at the Trump Hotel, was the only restaurant Trump would
and
eat in Washington.
And confer the majesty of his appearance upon all who were there.
He needed the big applauded entrance, departure. He would pause. It was quite a thing. He would always order the 40-ounce tomahawk steak, shrimp cocktail, fries,
don't forget the Diet Coke.
Chocolate cake for dessert and a bucket of Diet Coke. Because, why? The diet, very important.
Very important. After that, you've got to have
watch
the diet.
His girlish figure. Yes. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, it was quite a scene. You know, in fairness, like there was, everyone was always posting their stuff on Instagram.
Right.
And like, so, and Zach Everson, got to give him a shout out. Do you ever, 1100
I actually feel like I should, he should be a takeout guest.
He should be a great, he would be a great, I can't
we
flack
need
him
have
enough.
Zach Ever, we need to have him
Zach
on the show.
Zach Everson, I can give you his contact. Yeah,
please.
I give him a nice shout out in the epilogue, actually,
right.
Because I wanted to buy
because
him.
Because he had a, what was it?
He had a blog called, or he had a
website.
A newsletter. It
newsletter.
Was the newsletter. You had to subscribe.
1100 Pennsylvania.
1100 Pennsylvania, which basically charted the comings and goings. And, you know, he'd follow Instagram.
With microscopic
accounts.
Detail.
Microscopic detail. And, like, he's a good investigative reporter, and, like, he checked documents. It was a great one-stop shop. So, like, I actually said in the book, do you think I actually saw Marco Rubio's wife eating a salad at the BLT? No. Zach took a picture. Or Zach found it on Instagram. So,
yes. Try,
you know, shout out to Zach. Great guy. You should totally have him on the takeout.
And it's important because it was the Trump place of business.
Absolutely.
It was a business. It raised its rates when Trump would call people to Washington.
Yep.
It made
January
money
6th.
Off his own fame, fortune, and presidency.
Yes.
In a way that I don't want to be naive about this.
We hadn't seen before, right?
We had never seen this before. Let's see, the Obama International Hotel.
George
the,
W. Bush,
the Bush
International
Hotel.
No.
The golf
Jimmy Carter,
course.
No.
No, it was
Ronald
amazing.
Reagan
and
Hotel.
By the way, he's keeping track. Like, he was very pleased when congressional candidate so-and-so were spending, you know, $50,000
on a funder, you had it there.
Fundraiser, just
you
like they're doing
there.
Now at
right.
Mar-a-Lago. Like,
yeah.
your campaign committee will, you know, if you'll tens of
so this goes to another thing that I want to talk to you about, which is this orientation the former president has to those who support him.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've heard it, I've heard it.
Yeah.
We have this dialogue and we say, this is really troubling, this is unprecedented, it violates everything that's normative about the presidency,
yeah.
And they would say, good.
Right.
He's smarter than all you other jerks. He's
yep.
He's making it. He made his name. He won the presidency.
Yep.
F you.
Yep, absolutely. To show how
it's
smart.
It's proof.
It's proof.
It's
absolutely.
Proof of concept for them.
Proof of concept. You know, he, like...
He's the wise guy. You're the dummies.
Yeah, you guys all, like, gave, you know, showed them your tax returns. Why? Like, why would you do that? I'm very smart.
Why did you fall for
I don't
all
pay
that?
Any taxes because I'm very smart. Not because I'm dishonest. Not because I'm inscrupulous. It's because I'm smart. You
and
know?
Is part of that a deeper... accounting that Washington journalism for the last 20 years has to come to grips with? Because if you tell the country this city sucks, it's full of grifters and hypocrites and phonies,
yeah.
and shysters who are just trying to take you to the cleaners and you don't know it,
yeah.
Trump comes along and says, guess what, it's all true, and I'm going to fix it.
Yeah,
is there some level of accounting that the kleptocracy of the intelligentsia here have to come to grips with?
I mean, maybe. I don't think we're wrong, though.
Right.
I mean, if that's what the country... I mean, look, it sounds disdainful to say, but... I mean, here's what gives me hope. We have not seen much proof that that model works for anyone other than Trump.
Right.
Okay? Like, Republicans, when Trump has not been on the ballot, whether it's in special elections or the midterm election, at least during his presidency, have not done well. Okay, people trying to be like getting away with whatever they get away with, you know, it hasn't worked. So maybe Trump is a one-off in that way. Like, we'll see if, you know, if Herschel Walker can get elected, or if Eric Greitens can get the nomination and get elected in Missouri. I mean, mm-hmm. That's, you know, who knows? Remains to be seen.
So you, near the end of the book, anonymously quote a congressman who's a Republican who mm-hmm. said, our plan, speaking of the party.
Yeah.
About this whole thing you just laid out is that he dies. That's the plan.
They have no other plan. I mean, it's like the Republicans.
What did you think when you heard that?
I'd heard it before, actually.
Okay.
That's like there have been like some actually pretty Trumpy, but then non-Trumpy people who have said that. I mean, who have pretty big followings on like on social media, pretty well known. You know, I think it goes to just how passive they are. They're waiting for some. Intervention that will solve their problem for them. They have no agency. It's like they need a divine
intervention.
Or spine. But they need, like, God to come in and, like, you know, take care of their problem or you know, a heart attack, whatever, you know, whatever you believe.
As was said in a completely different context, hope is not a strategy.
No, it's not. Or that. No, it's true. But no, it's like, so Liz Cheney said this to me, and it's 100% true. You know, the problem I have is, I mean, if you're like Kevin McCarthy, you're going to go all in with Trump, and we all see what that's about. But it's the bystander. Like Mitch McConnell, this is what she said, is a bystander. He's just waiting for the problem to take care of itself. He's not going to do anything to right. impeach him or to convict him. He wants to, but he's like, we're going to let the Democrats take care of this. And of course they can't. You know, he could help, but he's chosen to be a bystander.
And a bystander at a pivotal moment in American history will not age well, I don't believe.
I would hope not. I mean, who knows how history will be adjudicated? But I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, it will probably send a really
I mean, I mentioned at the top that it would be better to read this history to live it. But you and I are living it. Everyone
we all
who's
are.
Here is
it's
living it. Everyone, and everyone here has a choice.
You know,
and back to where we started. If you say you don't have a choice, guess what? You don't have choices. But that's not true.
It's
everybody
not
true. Has a choice.
And this is why I'm very happy that Liz Cheney is so conservative. Her voting record is so in line with Trump because they can't just say, oh, it's a liberal thing.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I've had more common cause with conservatives.
And whether you've watched the January 6th hearings or not, just go through the list of witnesses. 95% Republicans.
Yeah.
I would say 90% Trump serving Republicans. I'm Major Garrett.
All watch the takeout.
Exactly. Indeed. Everyone does.
100%.
We need to say farewell to our radio audience for those on podcast platforms and watching so closely on CBS News streaming. Stay tuned for the Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett. We'll see you next week.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car. It's the two-door coupe that was there for your first drive. The hatchback that took you cross-country and back. And the minivan that tackles the weekly carpool. For the cars you couldn't live without, trust Amica Auto Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett. McIntyre is our host restaurant. Always great to be here. Mark Leibovich, our special guest. The book, Thank You for Your Servitude. One of the themes in the book is about two funerals, one for John McCain, one for George Herbert Walker Bush. And in This Town, the book that preceded this one, you sort of take Washington funerals very much to task as a place in which a lot of puffery and I'm here, therefore I'm relevant. My relevance makes this funeral a thing.
Right.
But it seemed to me what you were describing in both of these funerals were all of that true, but they were also official Washington's way of grousing and rejecting Trumpianism in a kind of
absolutely
ornamental way.
Yeah, I mean, look, funerals are, I think, extremely great window into a culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
I first of all, I really love a good funeral, meaning that I learn a lot about the departed, I learn a lot about the living, I learn about life. I mean, I find it very enriching, no matter what the tradition mm-hmm. or context. But, yeah, I mean, Tim Russert's funeral, which was the first scene
yes.
in This Town, was a cocktail party. So that was the scene. It was like people, business cards were flying around. It was a place to see and be seen.
Right.
And so
that you were there
that
meant
was,
something.
That I was there, yes, exactly. People were fighting for seats. John McCain's funeral was very much, I mean, first of all, McCain himself choreographed it. He had Obama and Bush give two of the eulogies, both of whom he lost very bitter elections to. He made a point of making sure Trump was not invited. Mm-hmm. It was a big middle finger to Trump. And, you know, that was quite a scene, too. And a lot of people in the press were saying, okay, this is a message from the old one. And it kind of was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone was there. Same with Bush. I mean, Trump actually did go to Bush 41s, and it was awkward. Like, he had the Hillary death stare. You know, Michelle Obama could barely look at him. You know, it was
capital
quite a
capital letters, awkward.
It was really quite a thing to see. But, no, I mean, I do think that, like, you know, this is not by design, but I think you can learn a lot about a culture by sort of deconstructing the funeral scene a little bit.
No doubt. Yeah. So, as you might remember, we have the three threshold questions here in the Takeout Outtake Special. I want to update them in case you wish to. So, most influential book in your life, all-time favorite movie, long drive, long flight, what kind of music do you listen to? And I'm going to add to that something that you have streamed recently that you really dug.
Okay. Good. Okay, so what's the first one?
Most influential book in your life.
I'll just say What It Takes. Mm-hmm. Loved What It Takes. It sort of opened my eyes when I read it to, like, wow, that's possible. You can actually do that. Mm-hmm. Of course you can, because there's only one Richard Ben Kramer.
Richard Ben Kramer. The great thing about that book, it's the 1988 presidential campaign. That book came out in the summer of 1992.
Amazing, right?
4 years of research, brilliant writing. It is the seminal work.
Keep telling my editor, I need another 4 years, but it never flies.
It is the seminal work.
It's a great work. Amazing.
It really is spectacular in every way.
Absolutely.
Favorite movie, or one of your favorite movies. And the way to think about that, you're scrolling through and you see it and you stop.
Diner. Yeah.
Barry Levinson.
Loved it.
Baltimore.
Yep. I saw it like a million times. Haven't seen it in a while, but I love that movie.
Very good. Music.
You mean on the long drive?
Yeah. Or long flight. Yeah.
You know what?
Something you're really going to just jump into with
both
feet.
Here's what I like. I like a rental car with 10 buttons set, all with Sirius XM. Mix it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Flip around if you're really... I can't do one artist. I can't even do three artists. I need like the serendipity of finding stuff. So that's
you like randomness.
Love randomness.
Unpredictability.
I miss the serendipity that the previous media culture afforded.
That in another era, in big markets, the top FM DJ would put together a set, and people would applaud the set from their cars.
Love
between commercial breaks.
Love the set.
Like, how did you put those five songs together, and why?
Yeah, and radio is just in a bad place as far as over the air. Love the satellite.
What have you streamed recently that you have totally gotten into?
Yeah, Yellow Jackets.
Okay.
You haven't seen Yellow Jackets on Showtime?
Heard about it.
Oh, boy, is that dark. It is so well done.
Fitting for our times, in other words.
In a weird way. It's just not the kind of thing I would normally watch, but, boy, is it well done. Christina Ricci, Juliette Lewis, phenomenal. Highly recommend.
You heard it from Mark Leibovich. Yes. Yellow Jackets and lots of other cool things. It's been a pleasure. Mark Leibovich, always great to hang out with you.
Major, it's great to be back on The Takeout.
Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you next week. I'm Major Garrett from McIntyre's. See ya.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus, starting May 1st.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.